This episode of The Profit Express is brought to you by Corbett Public Relations, promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. So please visit my friends at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. Well, hello and welcome to The Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and I'm inviting you to join me each and every week so together we can win the battle for business. So thanks so much for being on board. Thanks for sharing some of your time today. And you can follow me and the show on Instagram at The Profit Express. You can also follow me on Twitter at Profit_Express and also on Facebook at The Profit Express page. So, being a sales performance coach for two decades, one of the greatest benefits I've offered my clients is the ability to hold them accountable to themselves and to their businesses. And I like to think of the show, The Profit Express, as an extension of that for you, to help be a part of your team, to help hold you accountable personally and professionally. And if you listen to the show, you know how I love to do that. I love to do it by asking great questions that get you thinking. So today's question is, how comfortable are you being uncomfortable? How comfortable are you at being able to push through when it is most important for you to push through in those challenging, tough times, personally and professionally? So that's the question for today. How comfortable are you at being uncomfortable? Now, today's guest is a perfect person, a perfect guest to answer that question. Because in 2000, he really pushed his limits. He really became comfortable being uncomfortable. He ran 1,620 miles here in the United States from Denver to San Francisco. And he did it while carrying a 35-pound pack. Then a year later, in 2001, he broke the 100K world record for running on a treadmill for 100 kilometers. Now, if that's not enough, he also ran and completed what's been called the toughest foot race on the planet, the six-day, 155-mile Marathon des Sables, and it's run in the Sahara Desert. So now you might be thinking to yourself, Tim, I mean, is this has to be a former Olympic athlete. I mean, who is this person? Well, the fact of the matter is, this person is an ordinary person, very much just like you and I. And he left school and headed to the military. And when he got to the military, he actually didn't pass the basic training test of running a mile and a half. He was actually called the fattest person in his, I think it was his platoon, his regiment, whatever it was, in the Army. And he was bullied. He finally passed. He finally gets in the Army. Then he tells a sergeant of his, hey, I want to become a Green Beret. The Green Beret tells him, that's impossible. It's never going to happen for you. Well, it did. On the third try, he actually passed the test and became a Green Beret. And to me, going through those kinds of challenges in life, being just an ordinary person like you and I, is somebody I want to talk to. It's somebody whose story I want to share with you today. And now he's also become a prolific writer. He's written 6 books. I believe his 7th is on the way. His current book, I love the title. I can give you part of the title. The title is Man the F Up, and we're going to talk about that. And today's guest is none other than Mark Llewellyn. Mark, welcome aboard the Profit Express. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you, Tim. Very good. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your show.
It's a pleasure to have you on. So everybody can tell from your accent, you're from England. Where in England are you calling us? Are you joining us from today?
Well, I'm not from England, but you're very close. That's fine. I'm from the UK, so I'm from Wales.
Okay. I hope I didn't insult. I know if it's an insult or we're all good.
No,
okay.
Well, I like English people. I like Scottish people. Irish, I'm fine. I don't mind.
It's all good. Okay.
I'm a lover of the world.
Very, very good. So again, thanks for being on. It's a story like yours, honestly. To me, As that sales coach, somebody who keeps his clients accountable, a great way to be accountable is the quality of the questions that you ask yourself. It's about examining and being reflective as to your actions and what you're doing. And I've been following your story for a number of years. It's, to me, it's always been a fascinating story, and we're going to certainly get into parts of that. So what I'd like to start off with, though, is how did you go from being called the fattest member of your troop when you first joined the Army? You were bullied, right? How did you go from that point physically and mentally in your life? And then at one point, you ran and completed the Marathon Disables, which is one of the toughest foot races on the planet, Sahara Desert. It's, what, 155 miles. How does that happen in somebody's life? That's what's fascinating to me. How did you get there, Mark?
It just really started with I wanted to be more than the person that I was at the time. And, you know, it's also, there's many different factors. There's that, there's wanting to be more, there's wanting to achieve more. And there's also that thing about, you know, someone says, oh, it's impossible for you. And I think you've had it, and everyone watching this will have had it, where you just think, I will show you, kind of thing. And then it was just really, it was setting a lot of goals. It was taking a lot of action. It was not ever giving up. And it was listening to people who were supportive of what I wanted to do, rather, and getting myself away from people that weren't so supportive.
You bring up an interesting point, because I know in a number of your books you've written six. I think you have the seventh coming out soon, correct?
Yeah, I do. Rhino Skin.
Rhino Skin. and the sixth one, which is Man the F Up, I think it kind of gives people a sense of the kind of books that you write. You said you wanted to align yourself more with people who were supporting what you're doing versus people who weren't. That's interesting. To me, I kind of hear that as, you know, your environment and your self-talk and the things that you say to yourself.
Huge.
Tell us your perspective, Mark's perspective, on the conversation that you have with yourself.
I mean, when it came to the running initially, it was just, I was trying to run a mile, and I was trying to do it just above walking pace, and I was 16 years old, and I just found it horrendous. And I could just not understand why anyone would want to run 5K. I mean, I used to look at people that run 5Ks, you know, obviously just 3.1 mile, and I was like, oh, that's just sick. And I couldn't even get my head around marathon runners. And I didn't even know that ultra distance runners even existed at that point.
Right, right.
And it really was just, you know, I started running up a road in my hometown, Haverford West, and I was running up this Broadhaven Road, and I just kept on saying to myself, you know, you're a great runner. Of course, I couldn't tell anyone else that, but I was just BSing myself, saying, you know, I'm great at this. It just wasn't great. But the more you tell yourself it, the better you become of it, you know? So it's just that repetition. And then you get to the 1 mile, and then, oh my God, I can run a whole mile without stopping. That was a big achievement. And then maybe I can do a mile and a half, and maybe I can do a 2 mile run. And it just really built up and built up, and it didn't stop.
So you're at the point, you're 16 years old. Mm-hmm. Being able to run a mile was like a Herculean task, and you're sucking wind. But you knew then to be able to tell yourself, yeah, hey, you're a great runner. You're a great runner. You can get through this. So it's you're literally just chiseling away at this.
Yeah, that was just, I don't know if that's luck, or maybe that was a bit of luck, the way I started to try and devise it myself. Because at that time, I really knew nothing about psychology teachings or personal development.
Right.
And it wasn't really until I was about 18, 19, I started to look more into that. I had already passed the commando course, and I'd become a green beret. And yeah, it was just by luck, if you like. I thought, well, I seem to be telling myself that I'm good and I'm getting better, so I'm just going to keep on doing what's working.
Well, I think you're being a little humble. I don't know if it's luck or it's actually, you know, your positive self-talk with, you know, just keep at it and keep grinding it, which is what it seems like it was for you.
Yeah, that's it. And I mean, now if you read a personal development book, 95 or 99 times out of 100, they will say visualize, goal setting, focus, perseverance, determination, all of these things. But I don't really know about any of them back then because it was just, so it was just this real, I felt like a pioneer in my own life, you know. There are millions of people around the world that know all of that because they were, when I was 16, they were 30 or 40 or 25. So they knew right. that stuff. And I just didn't know any of that stuff. I just thought, well, I came out of school. I never went back for my exam results. So I didn't even know what my results were. I didn't know if I had A's, B's, C's, D's, probably D's. And I didn't really pay attention in school. And, so I never went back, didn't know my exam results, and then my friends were like, oh, you know, I'm going to go in the army, and I just thought to myself, well, God, I don't know what to do. I'll probably join the army because it's the easiest option. Physically, it's not the easiest option, but it was the easiest option for me because I thought to myself, maybe, God, I wonder if I could be a mechanic, but I talked myself out of that, and I was like, no, I'm not clever enough to be a mechanic, because they're too intelligent. So I was like, I'm just on the army.
But it seemed to serve you very well, though.
With the army.
Yeah,
it did. I mean, I went through the basic training, and when I went through the basic training, I mean, get the bullying thing as well. I was also, you know, I can remember someone kicking me up the bum and, you know, people pushing me into lockers and being nasty and all that sort of stuff. And I was fairly decent at fighting, you know. I'm no professional boxer type skills, but I mean, I'd always done very well with that. But I was not so much frightened of getting a beating. I was frightened that if I took on the bully and I beat the bully, who was the sergeant's little pet.
Right.
Then I was going to get kicked out of the army, so I wouldn't retaliate against anyone. I was scared to lose my job. I thought, well, if I lose my job, that's where my self-esteem was back then. It was just like that. I just felt I wasn't capable of doing anything else at that time.
Okay. Now, in your book, and this is your sixth book, Man the F Up, love the title. You speak about, you always know it's a great title if you can't really say it all on air, but hey. So you speak about, on a very serious note, you speak about your family having a tragic history with suicide. You talk quite a bit about that. I would really be interested to know, because I can only imagine, obviously, thankfully, I didn't go through that with my family. What did you learn from that?
God, what did I learn? I just, I don't know how to answer that question. I just did think to myself that the way I thought about it was, and the way I think when I go through mental challenges, which we all go through, is, you know, you've always got to keep you've got to keep focused on why you shouldn't be doing something like that. The most difficult time I've ever had wasn't actually when I was going through the most difficult time in my life in many ways. I built it up to be the most difficult time in my life. I was £43,000 in debt, no big deal. I'd been through that before. You know, I had come out of the forces and I had achieved quite a lot of good, cool things. And then I was like living at home with my mum and I couldn't pay the bills and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this is terrible. And then I couldn't set up a run that I wanted to set up. And the funny thing that pulled me out of it is my father said, well, he said that people that kill themselves, they've got to deal with it on the next level. And I was like, oh, I can't even, I didn't want to be here anymore, but I was like, I can't even kill myself, because now I've got to, if you believe in the life after death, which I do, or at least there's a possibility of it, if you take your life and then you're on the next level and you can see what you've left behind, all of the devastation and stuff, you're probably in a worse situation than when you're here and you killed yourself. So I was like, oh my God, I can't even kill myself. I can't even kill myself to get out of this mess that I'm in.
You don't want to laugh about suicide, because it's obviously it's such a tough, heavy topic. You dealt with it with your mom. I think it was uncles. It might have been a grandfather, if I recall in the book.
My dad's cousin, my mom, my granddad, my granddad's brother as well. But then they had done that, and that was in the past. When my mum did it, I was still a baby.
Right. So,
but you mentioned about the laughing and stuff like that, and you know, I think that's fine, because that was one of the great things about the army, especially when you're in an army commando unit. You laugh about things that really you shouldn't be laughing about, you know. So it's comical, and if someone was like, "Oh God, you know, I didn't know your mum killed herself when you were a baby," I was like, "Oh, what can I say? I was just an ugly baby." But you know, so it's making light of it, really. I mean, I'm not making light of people taking their lives. It's a horrendous thing she went through and all of that. I wasn't that bad, by the way. I wasn't the obviously reason, but you know, you've just got to put things into perspective, I think.
So it was actually you're going through another period in life. You're 43,000 pounds in debt, living at home. And it was your dad who put it into perspective for you. So you actually contemplated suicide yourself. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, well, I was, when I was going through this difficult time, I just thought to myself, I literally don't want to live anymore. I don't want to live anymore. I hadn't planned it out, you know. I hadn't planned.
Right.
I went and, you know, wrote some flipping car fumes and all of that stuff like that. And, you know, but my dad said that to me probably 5 or 10 years before I actually thought of, I have had enough here, I just can't handle anymore.
Right.
Everything in my mind was going wrong. I mean, like, ironically, I've been through worse times with close members of my family dying, which was worse, but I didn't build it up in my mind to be worse. I built that situation up in my mind to be something that it really shouldn't have been. And that's what we can do, you know. People can get a parking ticket and they could just go, you know, they could lose it over a parking ticket for all we know. It's almost like that Michael Douglas thing. He gets stuck in traffic on that. You're just stuck in traffic. There's no need to go crazy, man.
It's interesting how powerful your dad's perspective on it really was, and say, hey, listen, if you do this, you know, unfortunately, it makes it worse for you. You can't really escape it.
Now it's like, even though I don't have a religion, I believe that there's a universal power or God or a higher power, stuff like that.
Right.
But let's just say it's 50-50 chance. There might be life after death. There might not be life after death. If we're gonna play.
Okay. Right.
But I was still in a 50-50 situation. So if I did take my life, it was 50-50. That's how, because none of us know. We all have our beliefs, but none of us have crossed over and come back and all of that sort of stuff. And as far as I'm aware,
so right, I right.
To take that 50-50 gamble, and I was like, I'm just going to muddle through this.
So you're a prolific writer. You've written what's coming up on 7 books. Your current book is Man the F Up.
Yeah.
The next book is Rhino Skin. I did see the cover online, by the way, on social media. I love the cover of the book alone is fantastic. It really is. It's an awesome cover. And in your writings and in how I followed you on social with your message, do you feel that people today, we're in 2021, do you feel that they rely on telling themselves or being the victim too much today, yes. in your opinion?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the things that I've talked to friends recently, and of course with the lockdown and the virus, and people are struggling more than maybe at any time in the last 40 years, of course, financial challenges and all of these things. So it's very difficult. But I mean, I always think to myself, because I write about it as well. I mean, when I'm looking at content to write, I'm writing about people that have got no arms and legs. That Stephen Hawking, for example, he's in the Man Up book, quadriplegic. Then you've got Immaculée Ilibagiza, who's in that Man Up book as well, where she had her family hacked to death with machetes by her neighbors when there was like a genocide in her country in Rwanda. And, you know, you think of all of these things. And I say it to people all the time, because obviously now more than ever, people say, oh, you know, I can't wait to get out of this lockdown. Because over in Wales, we're in a lockdown and stuff, and we've been terrible. Unfortunately, Great Britain have been really bad with handling the virus thing, whereas New Zealand just shut it down. There's virtually no cases, but, you know, we
right.
do that, and we're paying the price still now. We're in this thing. But I still say, well, you know, at the end of the day, you do have to be grateful for what you've got, because that's where most people who want to take their lives are not grateful anymore, and they are thinking of themselves, and that's what I was doing at that point in my life. You know, I know some people don't believe in luck. I believe there's an element of luck, and then there's an element of you make your own luck as well. Mm-hmm. I was lucky. I was born into one of the richest, most awesome countries in the world. It's like the States is, Canada is, New Zealand, Germany, France, and Italy. Phenomenally rich countries. So, I mean, even when people are like, oh, I'm really poor, well, you know, there's about 6 million people are going to die of starvation this year. And if you were in one of these, you know, developed countries, you ain't going to be dying of starvation.
Right. Listen, that's a great perspective. And, you know, one thing you mentioned in the book was you said, hey, you know, when you're at that point of being up against it, a challenge, you're feeling down, whatever it is, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you said, hey, sit down and put together a list, a simple list of 20 things you're grateful for.
Yeah.
And what a simple exercise, but how powerful is that at changing your mindset and your psychology?
It's huge, you know. It's just I'm sitting in a nice comfy chair here. I've got food. Sitting in a nice comfy chair, you know, I've got a roof over my head. I'm warm. My son's in the other room. My mum's in the other room there. We're just visiting today. And, you know, there's 6 things straight away, you know. So you could rattle off. I can get into my car. And I can drive home. And I can, you know, there's so many things that we've got. And, you know, I was just writing a piece on, you know, Andrew Carnegie, the great steel tycoon. I mean, we live better in many ways than Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller did. They couldn't jump in a car, and not the cars that we have today, the
right.
plane. But, you know, when you, it's like, you know, you look at the famous kings and queens, the Victorias, the Henry VIII and stuff. They're around on horses and stuff. So we've never been so spoiled in our life. Never. And but some people will say, oh, well, that's okay, but it's a different time. And, you know, if I want to feel sorry for myself, then I'm just going to feel sorry for yourself. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of the American personal development industry, and they helped me take it to another level above what I was in the military. Because I'm just very clever. I was a big fan of Zig Ziglar. I used to correspond with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I sent a letter to Zig, and we started corresponding before he passed and stuff, which was an honor. And, you know, he tells a story about this woman that was serving in a restaurant that had a really bad attitude. She was a waitress, and he was just saying, you know, how... you know, you're not very happy. And she goes, no, I'm not. And he just says, well, I got some bad news for you. And she said, what is it? your life's about to get worse. She was like, what do you mean it's about to get worse? And he said, if you keep on having that attitude, it's going to get worse. And it was just like, that is it. I love it. I need straight talk, no BS. It's like, this is the way it goes. And some people, when I put the man they F up, you know, sometimes you and some people are like, oh, I'm suffering with, you know, all of these abbreviations that they come up with these days. Well, yeah, but you can still be grateful. You have to, at the end of the day, you have to get a grip, you have to man up, you have to do all of these things. And it is very offensive to some people, but you can just be like that woman that Zig Ziglar was talking about, and just, you'll never get out of it.
The story goes, he's in a restaurant, there's a waitress who's saying she's having a bad day, and he tells her it's about to get worse.
It was either a restaurant or some other woman that's seen him backstage. There's two very similar stories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, go on, sorry.
No. So then he tells her, so somebody's having a bad day, and I mean, you know what I love about that? I too am a fan of Zig Ziglar. He's one of the classics here in America, it's the honesty, and doing, because again, look, human nature, people don't like conflict. You know, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. I get it. I understand. But he actually did that woman such a favor, and hopefully she was listening to him.
She was. I mean, he actually said, you know, she was like, what do you mean things are going to get worse? He said, you're about to lose your job. He was like freaking out then. What do you mean I'm about to lose my job? And he said, you can't have an attitude like that.
Right.
And it would, you know, that's the path she was heading down. So we can feel sorry for herself. And the thing is about the Man Up book as well, the Man the F Up book, is I say at the start of that, there will be times in your life when you don't just like, oh, well, that's happened, let's carry on. When you lose a loved one and certain things happen in your life, you know, there's a lot of pain. And I say that because nobody gets through this life without any pain or suffering. I've never met anyone. You're either going to go through physical pain or emotional pain. Chances are, like 99.9% of the people, you're probably going to go through both of those in your life.
Right.
So, you know, it is a realistic book because you can't just like, oh, I'll shrug that off straight away. There are certain things that happen in our life with bereavement. They take time, I feel, you know, personally for myself. Again, that is getting around the right people and support system. And some things just do take time.
No doubt. No, that's well said. But again, as I'm hearing in our conversation today, Mark, it's also reminding the people listening, no matter the challenge, if it's a business challenge, right, personal challenge, we still have choices as to how we respond to those challenges. Because it can still be a horrible challenge, losing a loved one. Horrible. How you're responding to it. The choice in your actions to respond to that. Key.
Yeah.
Very key.
Talking to a friend the other day, and he said that he's got a friend, and that friend had been doing very well financially for years on end. Then the virus hit. He had one bad year out of his last 30-odd years, and he threw himself out of a 10-story building.
Oh.
You know, so it's like one bad year. So it probably wasn't that bad, actually. You know, he just thought it was. And sometimes we have this thing where we're like, oh, we're supposed to be more successful. But even if you look at the most successful, and if you're talking about, if you define success in terms of the money and the fame or whatever, or the gold medals or whatever it is, there's a lot of people out there that are a bit messed up. It's like there's a lot of celebrities just in rehab, you know? So it doesn't limit everything, you know? Although it is better to go through hard times with money than without money, in my opinion.
It can soften the rough edges, you know?
Yeah, it can. I'd rather be able to feed myself and have a home. Do you know what I mean?
It certainly makes it easier. Absolutely. Yeah. And today's episode is brought to you by Corbett Public Relations, promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. So please visit my good friends at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. And today's guest is Mark Llewellyn, and he's a prolific writer. He's written 6, about to be 7 books, has done some amazing physical challenges, from running 1,620 miles here in America from Denver to San Francisco while carrying a 35-pound pack, breaking the world record for the 100K running on a treadmill, which blows my mind. I could barely run a couple miles on a treadmill. And then which I want to talk about now, that marathon disabled in the Sahara Desert. It's a 6-day race. It's 155 miles. To me, now I'm a guy who runs 5 and 10Ks. I do like going out and running. I've never come close to a marathon. Never mind ultras, which are super popular now. Just tell me the story. What are you doing? I mean, because that's running. I mean, that's a dangerous environment. Being in the Sahara Desert for 6 days? No? I mean, what was that like?
I mean, I thought it was okay. It was certainly... No, it wasn't the hardest thing that I'd ever done, for sure. But it was billed as one of the toughest foot races in the world, but I'm not dismissing it. It's tough, but it's not one of the hardest things. There's harder ultra events out there. In fact, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life was I hadn't trained for years, and then I just went out one day and thought, how far could I do in 24 hours? And I managed to do 70 miles. And that, if I train, I could have done that 70 miles way in half, less than half the time. You know, it would have been quicker. It would have been easier on me. So it just depends what level you're at as well.
You know? Right.
Yeah. So if someone says, oh, well, you know, actually, I didn't think the marathon to Saab was that hard. It depends, you know, because, well, if you're trying to keep up with the winner, it's going to be tough. It's going to be horrendously tough, you know. So it depends how far you want to push it as well. But it's all relative to your state of fitness. I found the Commando course extremely difficult when I was 17, 18 years old. Probably when I was in my early 30s and early 40s, I would have done it relatively easy. It just depends what level you're at, you know.
So that race, that 6-day foot race in that Sahara, was not your toughest challenge,
no,
physically.
I mean, 100 mile was tougher. The 70 mile with the 70, that was tougher. Trained for that, that was really tough. The Strava distance challenge, you know, I was like 51,000 people in that. I was lucky enough to come first of that. There were just some great runners in that, and it really pushed me and tested me, and you know. So.
Now the 1600, you did that in the U.S. a few years back. Yeah. What was the idea behind it? How did that whole challenge come to be? What was your objective there?
Well, I wanted to do something more than the Sahara. And I thought, you know, I want to do something like 10 times the distance and carry in a pack again. But this time I wanted to do it without anyone there for a lot of the run. So I did that. My girlfriend at the time, she joined me in San Francisco, and she was on a mountain bike. But the idea really was just I wanted to do something different. I wanted to design my own thing, my own run. Because, you know, obviously you have these great events that are, you know, whether they're 5K, 10K, marathons, and ultras, they're fantastic events for people. But I wanted to do my own thing. So I thought, where's some really cool places to run in America? And I was like, okay, I just watched Jim Carrey on Dumb and Dumber. I was like, I got to go through Aspen, Colorado. I want to see Grand Canyon and Monument Valley, San Diego and, you know, LA and run up the coast. And I want to finish off in San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge. And I think they're really cool locations. I love America. And like I said, I mean, the American self-help industry really changed my life because I did take it to the next level. And I can remember even as a commando, even though we were elite, as an elite unit, I can remember some people saying, what are you reading them stupid books for, kind of thing, and just dissing them, or you're just making these authors rich and you're a fool and this and that. But then by the time I had got out, I had achieved a lot more than I had by doing the commando course and stuff like that. And then like 17 years later, some of the guys seen me and they were like, how did you go on to do all of this ultra stuff? And they just couldn't believe it. And they said, there's some books with them. I was like, yeah. they just kept on reading them. And it's all, everyone is brainwashed to an extent.
Right. It's
what you want to put into your brain. So I'm like, do I put this newspaper stuff into my brain, or do I read these great books from the Brian Tracys and the Zig Ziglars and the Jack Canfields? And
so you talk about the self-help movement here in America, which it's huge. Who's your favorite?
Oh, I don't know if I could say a favorite. I mean, Zig is up there. I love Jack Canfield and Brian Tracy. Tony Robbins does a lot of good stuff. Very difficult to say who's my favorite. I wouldn't say I've got a favorite. Shad Helmstetter is another great one. He wrote a book.
What to Say When You Speak to Yourself.
That is a phenomenal book. Not as good as Man the F Up, but it's...
Great segue, great plug. Now, it's funny that you mentioned that, Mark, because I having the show, I have a lot of publishers send books. I'm fortunate that way. I love reading, much like you do. I read Shad Helmstetter, and again, you don't hear that name a lot. Not a lot of people know, right? Am I right?
You're 100% right.
And it was a book that my brother gave me that, I forget where he got. Somebody gave it to him. What to Say When You Speak, when you're talking to yourself.
Yeah.
And it talks about gets into the real science behind, your self-talk and the how many no's versus yeses we hear from a young age until we're 18. That's a powerful one. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that one.
That is one of the best books I've ever read. I would highly recommend it to people. The other book that I would always say as well, someone had to push me for a very best book ever. It would probably be Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Classic.
Oh my God, that's a phenomenal book. And if you read that, and then because everything is dealing with people, you know, and it is. Once you understand how he does things, it's fantastic. You know, did you say you know Brian Tracy? You're aware of Brian Tracy?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I'm like, because obviously he's one of the big ones. And I met Brian. Funny story about Brian Tracy. So I met Brian when I was running through California. And I met him. I went to his office. We corresponded a bit in letters. God, this is how long. This is a funny thing as well, because this is in the day of early emails.
Right.
But if you want to get someone's attention, it's probably best to a handwritten letter is going to go a lot longer, you know, than, in many ways than that. And I knew that Brian had all of these psychology books that were very popular, but I had read one of his that was about him traveling in the Sahara. So I'm like, okay, now I'm going to say to him, hey, I'm going to write to him. I'm going to put my national newspaper articles in there to get his attention. And I spoke to him about a book that probably hardly anyone says, you know, about his story when he was in a Land Rover going through the Sahara. So he must have been like, oh my God, someone's, they're not talking about the psych, these other books that I'm
the doing. Usual, typical, right. The
psychology stuff, yeah. So we connected, I met him and me and my girlfriend. So we stopped the run at a certain point and then we went onto his offices. We met him and he said, do you want a lift back to the point that you finished your run at so I could start the run again? So we did that, and he put my girlfriend's bike in the trunk of the car, the boot of the car, we call it, and drove back to this point. I said, this is the point, you know. And he pulled off the highway, I believe, I think in California, the one going up. I don't think it's a freeway. I think it's called a highway.
Okay.
Anyway, so we pulled off, you know, do you call it the hard shoulder as well?
Shoulder, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He pulled off onto it, but he didn't pull off enough. And he was kind of half, his car was halfway in between the road, the main road, and
right.
the hard shoulder. So I'm standing in front of this great person here, and there's a load of Americans driving past shouting, hey. Yeah. No, you get the hell out of, you know, get your car off the road, man. And I'm looking to see how he's going to react to these people being really abusive to him.
And right.
I thought it was hilarious how he acted. He was just like, it was almost like he was enjoying it. It was like he had what I talk about in my next book, Rhino Skin. He had like a force field, you know, Captain Kirk, shields up. And it was like, whatever abuse they shouted at Brian, he was just like, I'm not going to let that bother me one bit.
Really?
Oh, it was fantastic. Some people might have thought that was arrogant. And you could argue you could have pulled the car off the road a bit more. But, you know, what was done. And I thought it was fantastic the way he handled the situation. Because we've all come across people that preach a good story. And then when you get to know them,
right,
they just lose it, you know. And you're like, you're not. I remember talking to a friend once who was just saying, you know, oh, you know, I'm really mad at this guy. And I said, why are you a different person in real life than you are on Facebook?
Because on right. Facebook,
you're saying everything brilliant. I'm doing these positive things and stay. I said, you're having a mental breakdown, and you just. You know, you better take some of your own advice.
Well, yes, you had the rare, think about this, Mark. You had the rare glimpse into Brian Tracy when he wasn't on stage, when he wasn't yeah. performing, when he wasn't yeah. on like an interview, and he was put to the test. Very, very, that's a great story.
And he passed with flying colors, I can tell you. It was awesome.
Wow. Now, so... A lot of your career, who you are, is based in the military, is with ultra running, ultra distance marathons. But being an author is certainly now a big part of who you are and what you're doing.
Yeah.
Now, I've never written a book. You know, I've hosted this show, The Prophet Express, for 11 years now. You're writing. I think correct me if I'm wrong. I read it somewhere. You're trying. Your goal is writing 100,000 words a month. Is that? Did I get that right?
No. I don't know. I don't have a specific goal for writing. I had.
Okay.
Yeah, I had wrote like 400,000 words over the last few years. And
oh, okay. All right. I missed that. Maybe it was Ted. Okay. I obviously got that wrong. So but see, here's my question then. Writing one book is an accomplishment. You're about to release number 7. What led you to being an author, particularly in the personal development genre?
Well, there is that element of I knew I had all of this stuff in my head, and I knew I could help a lot of people by putting it down. And but there was also an element of I needed to make a living as well. And I can remember someone saying, oh, you know, you've got to be really passionate about what you do to be really good at it. And I was like, I don't really, To an extent, yes, but that's not always true in the beginning, because I became passionate about running, but when I started running, it was horrendous. I would have rather been lying in a bath, chilling out, eating Ben and Jerry's chocolate fudge brownie in front of a movie, getting fat. You know, it's easy. It's easy and it's enjoyable. And I didn't find running enjoyable, so I wasn't passionate about that. And it was the same with the writing. I found it difficult to write at the start. And I can remember there was a couple of people. I know, like, Lee Child from the Jack Reacher books, the thrillers.
Okay.
The Tom Cruise movies and stuff. I mean, I think he's one of the most successful, and I think he is the most successful thriller writer in the world now. But he said the same thing. He said, well, I just thought, well, I need an income, which probably isn't the answer that most people will want. Oh, I really wanted to write a book. So I was 4 years old and I started reading the Mr. Men books or James and the Giant Peach and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I just didn't. I just wasn't that person. And it was, but I did think to myself, if I can come from being horrendous at running to fairly good at running, I can probably come out of school with no qualifications, not great at English, and probably become an author. That's my logic anyway.
But as I'm hearing this story, I'll be honest, it wasn't the answer I was expecting, all right? I got to be honest.
It's a very unusual answer. There was someone else that was more successful than Lee Child. I can't remember who it was, but said the same thing. I've only ever heard it twice.
But you know what it is? It's a real answer. It's your experience, and thank you for sharing it, obviously.
I enjoy it now, though. Once I got into it, same with the running,
I became
more passionate about it. It's just at the start, I found it difficult. And
right.
I think with a lot of things, when people start on things, it's difficult. You know, even learning, you know, everyone's into, you know, I know yours is an entrepreneurial podcast and stuff like that. Even for me to learn how to do email subscriptions or AWeber and MailChimp, I was like, oh, yeah. I don't know if I can understand all of this. It's technical. And then you just keep on plowing forward. And it's the same with the publishing. It's like, I've got to learn the marketing, the Facebook ads, the Amazon ads, the editing, all of these things can seem so overwhelming.
Right.
You just take that first step and that second step and just keep going.
Well, you see, Mark, what you're doing, and that was, you know, my goal for the show today, as I start out with the question, you know, to the listeners who are the small business owners, the entrepreneurs, the sales professionals, how comfortable are you at being uncomfortable? Because I'm absolutely convinced that real success in life, however you define it, and it's different for everybody, you're not going to get there, any kind of significant success, without going through the uncomfortable.
I 100% agree. And we talked about Zig Ziglar there. I'll just say a quick quote of his. And he said words to the effect of, if you are tough on yourself, life is infinitely easier on you.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah, he's good.
One of your favorites, it sounds like. Yep.
T.S. Eliot as well. Only those who risk going too far can possibly find out how far one can go. You know, all of these great quotes that you hear off these great people, whether it's your Winston Churchill's, your Abraham Lincoln's, and all of this. And I love it. I love listening to all of these great people talking, and it's fantastic.
Well, you mentioned, like, when you were a commando, you were saying, you know, you're the fellow people in your unit were saying, oh, why are you reading those books? You're just making these authors rich. But just like exercising, it's something you've got to do. I mean, we all know this. You just don't run one day and you're ready for a marathon. No. And it's like with wisdom, with insight, with positive thought, it's something you're always feeding yourself. Always feeding yourself.
Yeah, it is always feeding yourself. And just going back to you've got to be uncomfortable. I do believe in that, but I think that there's a level where you've got to be really self-aware in life. I'm working on a book at the moment as well, another book, which is about one day it will be your last day on this earth. And I've come across quite a lot of people who have regretted not spending the time with their loved ones, for example, because they work too much. Now, so if someone says, oh, you know, I work harder than anyone else, or I'm away from my family more than anyone else, well, if that's your goal, then that's fair enough. I'm not one to criticize it, but there's a good chance you'll probably end up at the end of your life, 80, 90 years old, or, you know, whatever it is, you could look back and regret that. And that's why now is the time, whatever age you are. It's like I'm here with my mum. I could have done twice as many books, but I also, my mum is 81. I could spend more, I want to spend more time with my mum and have that balance, you know, because I don't want to be one of these people that'll be like, oh, great, you know, I've made loads of money and I'm very successful as an author and all this, and I've got 20 books out or whatever it is in a few years' time. But, you know, I've never seen my mum in the last few years of her life.
Well, listen, you're right in saying, because, you know, when it's over, when they're gone, that's it. You know, you can't get it back.
You can't get it back. I've seen an interview with Elon Musk and Richard Branson, and the interviewer said, Elon, advice would you give to Richard? And he didn't really say any advice. And then, funny enough, I didn't expect Branson to say this, but she said, oh, Richard, what advice would you give to Elon? And he said, I would just say, spend some more time with your family. And I was like, wow, that's fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, he just comes straight out with it. He's like, you know, because he obviously, someone like Elon Musk, I mean, he's burning the candle at both ends. He's a phenomenal entrepreneur and stuff, but it's what you want.
Right. But again, it's make sure you ask yourselves those questions, though, to keep yourselves honest, you know, to have that reflection personally, professionally. Do you have a mentor?
No. I would say the closest that I've got to mentors are some of the great people that we've talked to about, you know, the Zig Ziglars and the Brian Tracys of this world, where some people I haven't even met. And
right.
Like we say about these great people in the past, you know, they're the closest thing. It's like my dad was not particularly supportive of my stuff, and my mum was never that way. I love my mum dearly, but she was like, if I would say I'm going to achieve this, I'm going to do this, it would be like, yeah, you just need to get a job at the local supermarket or something like that.
Isn't it funny, Mark, how it's always the family that says, right, the ones closest to you, the family friend, oh, no, you can't do this, you're going to fail, right?
There's a whole section in Rhino Skin, in my next book. It's called Fighting With, I think it's called, the chapter is Fighting With The Family. I'm 47 years old now. I could
come right.
And my mum will be like, you shouldn't be making that decision with your life. Even at my age now, your mum will never stop telling you what to do. Not with everybody, but that is, like you say, it's a common thing, you know. And sometimes the family are so close to you, they're like,
yeah.
It's mind-blowing to them. If I'm going to be an author one day, right? I'm going to run a marathon or an ultra run one day, and they're like, yeah, you've never run 5K. You can barely walk 5K, never mind run it. So they just can't get their head around that, you know?
Well, listen, Mark, it's been a great conversation today. You know what? Yeah, and I don't say this as an insult, but you're an ordinary guy who's done some extraordinary things.
I'm a phenomenal guy that's done ordinary things. It's true. You know, I came out, when you come out of the gate and you're like, some people are further behind in life than others, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Right.
You know? But yeah, I am pretty ordinary. You know, it's just you don't want if you have a goal, keep on going, set that goal, have that vision, and just
right.
be just absolutely relentless. Obviously, you know, you don't want to lose your whole family over this, but then again, that's all down to your goals.
Well, thank you for sharing your perspective on what it is to be comfortable being uncomfortable today on the Profit Express. I really appreciate it.
It's been delightful sharing my wisdom with you.
Thank you. How can listeners follow you? No, I appreciate it. I really do. How can they follow you, Mark?
I'm on Facebook and Instagram and MarkLlewellyn.com. Obviously, you spell my name there. But yeah, that's where I am.
And awesome.
You can get my books on Amazon. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
God bless America, because you've made me stronger mentally. The good old personal development industry in America. So.
Well, you're very welcome on behalf of America.
Thank you for your service, America, personal development industry.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a real pleasure. And this is The Profit Express. And be sure to follow me on Instagram at The Profit Express, on Twitter at Profit_Express, Facebook, The Profit Express page, YouTube as well. And it's shows like this that each and every week I'm looking to help you with yourself, with the accountability, pushing yourself, your business, doing what you need to be doing to get one step further, being comfortable, being uncomfortable to achieve the potential that you are really capable of right here on the Profit Express.